So we are holding in Psachim, page Tess, last line, or is Yud Ches. The beginning of the Perek talked about the din that you're not allowed to do Melacha on Erev Pesach after Chatzos, and then there's the different Minhagim of before Chatzos. So then the Mishnah mentions, after it goes through a number of dinim in that regard, so it mentions that the Anshei Yericho, the people of Yericho, and we're not stand talking simple people, we're talking about, apparently, it seems from the discussion of the Gemara, these were distinguished people who know their way around Torah. So there were six things that they did, three, all of which the Chachamim disapproved of, but three of them the Chachamim actually called them out on. They were Moicha B'Yadam, and three that not. One of them, one of the ones they were, one of the ones they were in Moicha B'Yadam, is about a certain kind of malacha involving grafting trees or putting a certain kind of potion into trees to strengthen them that they were doing the whole day at a Pesach and the Chamor and Moicha for various reasons. So having mentioned six things that the Anshei Yericho did, which the Chachamim disapproved of all of them, but three of them they were actually Moicha and three not. So now the Gemara brings a Braisa with a similar thing about Chizkiyahu, a similar list of six unusual things that he did, where three of them the Chachamim were. Now the different, an interesting difference is that with the Anshei Yericho it says implying the Chachamim disapproved of all six, but for whatever reason they decided as far as three of them it's not worth making a big deal about. With the six things with Chizkiyahu, what it is three of them the Chachamim actually approved of, the other three they disapproved of and told them so. We have it in the Gemara, by the way, as a Braisa, and it's introduced here as Tanu Rabbanon. It's actually in the Mishnayos, it's printed as a Mishnah. And the Rambam unusually comments on it also. HaKosev brings over here from the Rambam's Pirush Mishnayos, this is even though in principle this is actually part of Tosefta on Or Masechta, so really it doesn't belong in Pirush Mishnayos by Rambam, but nevertheless, since there's Te'elos, there's good lessons in Avodas Hashem from it, then he's going to discuss it and explain it. So Tana Rabbanan, Shisha Dvarim Asa Chizkiyah HaMelech. There are six unusual things that Chizkiyahu did. Al Shloisha Hoduloi, Val Gimoloi Hoduloi. There were three of them that the Chachamim of his times agreed with that it was the right thing to do, and three that they disagreed with. The Elohim Shahoduloi.
Yes.
And at the bottom of page Tess, Msachim. Oh, it's Yud Ches. Make sure you're in Msachim, not a different Msach there. So Val Gimoloi Hoduloi. And for three of them, they, if you want, bring it over here. I'll take a look. So the first one was Girer Atzmeis Ovi B'mita Shochavolim. He dragged around his father's bones on a bed of ropes. And the Chacham agreed that that was a good thing. Chizkiyahu's father was Ochaz, King Ochaz, and we know from the Psukim that he was a very vile Rasha. He brought up a Dezara into Eretz Yisrael. He closed all the Bate Medrash. He did all kinds of other things. So now, so Chizkiyahu didn't have him buried with honor in order, Rashi explains, it would be a kapara for him because it would be a Kiddush Hashem that people would see that a Rosh is treated like that and they would learn that not to act that way. Poshut pshat is it means that when we say Atzmois, we mean it was right after his father died, but we're calling him Atzmois because in the sense of Rishoyim, B'chayim, Kruyim, Mesim, and so like he deserved to have been bones a long time ago. On the other hand, Anaf Yosef brings over here the possibility that maybe it really was 12 months later after Ochaz had gone through his 12 months in Gehenim. So now Chizkiyahu can do this for him as a further kapara. Like maybe he didn't get his complete kapara with his 12 months in Gehenim, and therefore Chizkiyahu has to do this as well. So that's the point. This itself is kind of a way of kibbud av. First of all, you don't really have the concept of kibbud av so much when the father is a rosh, because you have the same way as we have as far as v'ahavta l'recha kamocha and other mitzvahs, that when he's not oisa ma'isa amcha, you don't have those dinim, so it applies similarly over here. But this itself was an aspect of kibbud av to do this, that his father should have a kapara, like Rashi says, this way the rishoyim should learn not to behave like him. So that itself is part of the kibbud av that he has to do for him. Anyway, that was the first one. Second of all, kitas nechash nechoshes, he cut up and broke up the Nechash HaNechoshes. So that was the one that Moshe Rabbeinu had made back in Parshas Chukas, when there was the plague of the snakes that attacked the Yidden. So Vayas Moshe Nechash HaNechoshes. Eventually, the Pasuk describes people were worshipping it as an Avodah Zarah. So Chizkiyahu crushed it, and then the Chachamim agreed that that was a good thing to do. The Malbim has a very interesting explanation on the Pesukim over there. He says, so Taka, why didn't the kings up until, the Gemara mentioned in Cholin, that the kings up until Chizkiyahu's times, even the Tzaddikim, like Asa and Yehoshaphat, who worked hard to get rid of all that Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yisrael, they didn't, and why not? And the Gemara uses the expression, Makam Yinichulo, they scattered by, like they left him something that he'll become great with, but you got to ask, what, they leave it over deliberately, that Jews should be worshipping it for another 200 years, because one day there's going to be a Chizkiyahu who needs some kind of achievement to his credit. So he says, no, the vort is the earlier kings took the view that this Nechash Nechoshes was Moshe's and later on his family's personal property. So if other Yidden are worshipping it, fine, they can't ask for something. Whereas Chizkiyahu took the view and explained, and the Chacham agreed with him that no, it belongs collectively to the Jewish people, and therefore these people who are worshipping it are actually able to ask for it, and therefore he crushed it, and the Chacham agreed that that was the right thing. And the third one was v'gona sefer refuos v'hoidulai. The third thing was he hid away the sefer refuos. And the Chacham agreed that that was the right thing. So what's the sefer refuos? So this Gemara is also in Brachas. Rashi over here, and in Brachas explains, Pasha, it was a book that gave the cures for various kinds of illnesses. The problem is, Rashi says, people would just, they'd look up in the book, they'd figure out what they need to do for a sickness. So nobody was realizing that, you know what, when a person is sick, you have to dive into the Eibishter, you have to do tshuva. So therefore, so Chizkiyahu hid it away. Now here's where HaKosev quotes at length from the Rambam in Pirush HaMishnayos over here, and this is what the Rambam wants to bring out mainly by commenting on this. He says, absolutely not. How can you possibly say such a thing? Are you going to say a person b'chlal takes medicine that or a person does anything that any hishtadlus, the person makes any keli for the Eivishter's bracha, are you going to say he's not having a muna in the Eivishter? No, so he has a couple of other possibilities. Either he says the sefer refuos contain refuos that are based on magic and avodah zarah and things like that. So it was legitimate to write it in the first place because we know you're not allowed to do these things, but we know the Sanhedrin, for example, are allowed to learn these things. Members of Bate Dinim are allowed to learn how these things work so that they know how to judge people who are accused of doing such things, and also in order to be able to explain to people that it's foolishness and whatever. But now Chizkiyahu saw that people are misusing it, so if we had reason to hide it away. He says also another vert is the refuos in it may have been things. A lot of times you have where a small dose of something is a cure, a larger dose of the same thing is a poison. There's actually a famous medical expression along those lines, the dose is in the poison is in the dose. So therefore, what's happening is, so people are misusing these things to poison their enemies and whatnot, and therefore Chizkiyahu hid it away. So the Chacham approved of what he did, and in fact, the Gemara in Brachas mentions when Chizkiyahu himself was sick not long after that, during the time when Sanhedrin was about to conquer Yerushalayim and then failed, and he says, and then Chizkiyahu davened, and he says, "Vatoy beinecha asisi." The Gemara says, what's one of the things that he means by "Vatoy beinecha asisi"? Specifically that he hid away the sefer refuos. Anyway, so those were the three that the Chachamim agreed. The Elu Shaloi Hoduloi. On the other hand, the following three, the Chachamim disagreed with him and said he hadn't done the right thing. The first one was Kitzit Dalsa Sahechel. And by the way, it's listing them out of order. It's listing them out of order of when they took place. Why that is, I don't know. Anyway, Kitzit Dalsa Sahechel V'shigrom LaMelech Asher. He cut off the gold from the doors of the Hechel and sent them as a bribe to the king of Asher. So the Psukim in Sefer Melachim and describe the situation and Yeshaya that Sanhedrin was after. This is already after Sanhedrin had gone and conquered the kingdom of the Aseret HaShevatim and taken them all into Golus. Now 8 years later, he's back again to start attacking the kingdom of Yehuda, and he starts capturing all the fortified cities in Yehuda. They actually found part of an inscription from Sanhedrin himself where he boasts of how he says he captured 46 cities in Yehuda and took like 200,000 people from there into Golos and so on and so forth. So Chizkiyahu is very nervous. So he sends a bribe. So he has to collect it. So what happens is, so he says to Sanhedrin, you know, I'm sorry, I rebelled against you, because why is Sanhedrin coming to attack? Because Chizkiyahu wasn't paying the tribute that he's supposed to as a vassal. So Chizkiyahu says, I'm sorry, I'll pay whatever it is you demand. And Sanhedrin demands an enormous amount of gold and silver. So in order to raise it, Chizkiyahu had to take off the gold from the doors of the base of the Beis Hamikdash. Now the Chachamim disagreed with that because, yeah, you have to make your keli for the Eibishter's bracha, but not to that extent. So that is, when it comes to that point already, you have to have bitachon in the Eibishter, rather than tampering with the Beis Hamikdash. And in fact, the Psukim described, by the way, that Sancheirim was not satisfied with the whole bribe or tribute or whatever you want to call it, and he brought his army and continued attacking and was about to conquer Yerushalayim and so on and so forth. So the whole sending him all that gold and silver didn't do any good anyway. So that was the first one. V'loy hoduloy, and the Chachamim disagreed that then said that wasn't the right thing to do. The second one, sosem as motzim mei gichin elyon, the second one also had to do with the war against Sancheiriv. He stopped up the outlet of the upper Gichin spring. The Gichin spring is a spring near Yerushalayim. It was the main source of water for Yerushalayim. So Chizkiyahu figured, the Psukim described in Divrei Hayamim, the main way to get to the spring is from outside the city. So that's a problem when Asher comes, they're going to find plenty of water to drink, and they'll have a much easier time with their siege. So therefore, he closed up the outlet of this Gichin spring and rerouted it to flow into Yerushalayim. You have the famous tunnel nowadays, the Shiloyach tunnel, which you can walk through. It seems from an inscription they found there and some various other details about it that this is what Chizkiyahu did at that time, that he used that to divert that water. So now it flows into the Shiloyach spring, which is at the southern end of Yerushalayim. V'loy hoduloy, and the Chachamim again disagreed and said that's not the right thing to do. Again, he should have more bitachon in the Eibishter, who told him that he's going to protect the city. No, so what it is he diverted it so that instead of it coming out of the ground in its regular place next to Yerushalayim, now it's diverted and it flows through this tunnel. What's wrong with that? First of all, is that, again, it shows a certain lack of bitachon in the Eibishter. There's also the idea, in particular, that spring, the Gichin spring, particularly is related to Malchus Beis David. We find that the kings of Malchus Beis David were anointed at that spring as a simon, shetimoshech malchusam, that their kingship should last long, just like a spring flows for a long time. So by tampering with it, he's messing around with that. There's actually a famous story in that connection where, fast forward a couple of thousand years, there's a story involving Reb Chaim Vital, who lived in Yerushalayim at the time, and the Turks at that point were ruling over Yerushalayim. And one time, the Turkish governor over there is reading through, and he comes across this thing in Tanakh, and maybe he comes across this thing in the Gemara as well with Chizkiyahu, and he says to Reb Chaim, I want to undo that. I want to unstop up the Gichin spring and let it continue flowing like it was before Chizkiyahu's times. And Reb Chaim didn't want to get involved, so he uses the Shem Kodesh and he transports himself to Damascus. And then the Arizal comes to him in a dream that night and tells him, you know, you had the opportunity then to fix up what Chizkiyahu did wrong over here, and with that to bring Mashiach, and you missed the opportunity. So. But that's the idea. In other words, is, you know, you don't just tamper with the infrastructure of Yerushalayim without you should have checked with a Navi or something instead of just doing it on his own. And the third thing is Ibar Nisan ben Nisan v'loy hoduloy. The third thing is, by the way, not only are the kings of Beis David compared to the Gichin, but also they're anointed by the Gichin. They're actually compared to it. There's a pasuk in Yeshaya where he refers to that the kings of Yehuda are compared to Mei Hashiloyach HaHorchem La'af, of slow flowing rivers of the Gichin, of the Shiloyach spring. So therefore, to tamper with that is like to tamper with Malchus Beis David itself. Anyway, the third thing is Ibar Nisan ben Nisan v'loy hoduloy. The third thing is he made an Ibuyur of Nisan when it was already Nisan. V'loy hoduloy, and the Chum disagreed. What happened was Chizkiyahu became king at the end, Ochaz died. Chizkiyahu became king at the very end of Adar. Now, Chizkiyahu realized like this, the Psukim described at some length in Divrei Hayamim. During the time of during Ochaz's reign, they had been worshipping Avodah Zarah. There was Avodah Zarah even in the Beis Mikdash, there were all kinds of, and the Kohanim and Levium had not been careful to keep the halachas of Tumah V'Tahor. So now Chizkiyahu realizes it's the end of Adar, it's only 2 weeks until Pesach. There's not going to be enough time to clean out the Beis Mikdash from all of this stuff that there is over there. And there's even a Gemara that mentions that there were actually images of Avodah Zarah carved on the walls, so it took time to sand all that off and whatever. And it's going to take time for all the Kohanim to become Tohar and to make it to Yerushalayim. So he decided what we need to do is we need to make a second Adar. We need to add an extra Adar, and then that way we have an extra month until Pesach. Well, the upshot is that now what happened was then. So the Gemara in Brachos and in Sanhedrin discusses the point. First of all, there is a man de'omer that what he did wrong is b'chlal, you're not supposed to make an ibur yor mipnei tumah. That's not a, there are valid reasons to make an ibur yor because of the tekufa, because of peiros ha'aviv or whatever, but not mipnei tumah. So that's one problem, is because that's not a valid reason to do it. The other way of looking at it is no, fine, b'dievet you do it mipnei tumah, that's not so bad, but you have to do it before Adar is over. And in particular, now what you have is that year Adar had 30 days. So now the 30th day can be part of Adar, or it can be Adar has 29 days, like it does nowadays. And the next day, and the 30th is already really the first of Nisan. Once it comes Nisan, it's too late to make an Ibur Yor. Hizkiah held that fine, but it's not the first of Nisan yet. It's the 30th of Adar, because this year Adar has 30 days, and there's 2 days of Shchodesh. So therefore, we still have one last opportunity to make an Ibur Yor. But the Chachamim disagreed with him and said no, because since that day could conceivably be part of Nisan, then already it's too late to make an Ibur Yor. And in fact, in the Psukim over there in Divrei Yomim, it mentions over and over. It says that they made Pesach in the second month, which there are Mefoshim on the Psukim over there who explain essentially that Chizkiyahu had everybody make Pesach Sheni instead of Pesach Rishon. But it comes out from these various Gemaras that no, it was Chizkiyahu who considered it Pesach Rishon. But the Chachamim of his times were saying, Loi hoidu loi, they wrote, when they wrote Sefer Divrei Yomim, when they wrote the records that eventually became Sefer Divrei Yomim, they called it Chodesh HaSheni, as much as to say, no, Chizkiyahu was wrong, and the month that he called Adar Sheni was the real Nisan, and now what he's calling Nisan is the real year. So that's the Loi hoidu loi that the Chachamim disagreed that he had done, that he shouldn't have done this.
But
they didn't go against him publicly on it, but we still see when they wrote Divrei Yomim, like they kind of had last word on the subject. In the Psukim themselves, by the way, it mentions that even with all of that, there were many people, it says in the Psukim, who hadn't become Tohar in time, and they're eating the Korban Pesach B'tumah, and Chizkiyahu had to especially daven that Hashem should accept the Korbanos anyway, by Yishma Hashem, by Yirpa Asa'am, and Hashem listened and accepted their Korbanos. So, in other words, even though Chizkiyahu put in this extra month so they'd have more time, still it didn't help, and there were still many people who were Tamei and didn't bother to become Tohar in time. Going back earlier in the Perek, for some reason in this Perek, in Yaakov, it kind of jumps around, I don't know why. So at the very beginning of the Perek, the Gemara discusses, now like this, we say in the Mishnah, that you can't do Melacha on Erev Pesach after Chatzos, and before Chatzos you have the different Minhagim. So the Gemara asks, why is Erev Pesach, what other Ayve Shabbos and Ayve Yom Tov, we find a similar thing. Ha'oysa Melacha ba'Ayve Shabbos is over Ayve Yom Tov min HaMincha l'mayla. When a person does Melacha on Erev Shabbos or Erev Yom Tov from Mincha and onward, which the Pashtus means Mincha G'doyla, although Rashi says over here that no, it means Mincha, here it means Mincha K'tana, so 9.5 hours into the day. Uva Matzoi Shabbos is over Matzoi Yom Tovim. Or on Matzah Shabbos or Matzah Yom Tov before making Havdalah or before whatever. Over Chol Makom Sheyesh Sham Nidnu Davera, or any other place, any other case where there is a Nidnu, literally a Nidnu means like a movement of Avera. It actually says it means a Remez of Avera. And the Gemara interjects that means Vasuya Tainis Tibur. That comes to include a Tainis Tibur, the ones that they had for rain. Some of the Tainis Tibur, they Malacha was Osir, but Rashi says, as far as other Tanias Tzibur, that's not the case. For example, Asara B'Tavis, Shivasa B'Tamuz, some Gedalia, you're allowed to do Malacha if you want. Tisha B'Av is different, Taka, and in fact, there are Gersois in the Gemara over here that have Tisha B'Av instead of Tanias Tzibur. Anyway, the Braisa says, Ein Roya, Simen Bracha L'Olam, he will never see a Simen Bracha from that work. Whatever it is that he earns or accomplishes during that time is going to end up offset by something else, by medical bills or other things that he's going to have to pay that he wouldn't have wanted to. So the point is, in other words, if already it's also on every Erev Yom Tov, what's special about Erev Pesach? And the Gemara points out that the difference is with other ones, it's Einar Roya Simen Bracha, but they don't put him in Cheirim for that, whereas if he does Malacha Erev Pesach, Achatzos, then they do. So there's that distinction. So the Gemara continues, Tanan Rabbanan, Yesh Zoriz V'Nisker. Sometimes you have a person who is very eager and very quick to do his work, V'Nisker, and he gains from it. The Yesh Zor is V'Nifsar. On the other hand, you have somebody who is very diligent and eager to do work, and he loses out by it. Yes, shuffle v'nisker. Then you have the opposite of a zoriz, the shuffle, a lazy person. A v'nisker, but he gains by his laziness. But yes, shuffle v'nifser, and then you have a person who's lazy and he loses out. So what do we mean? Zoriz v'nisker. What's the one who's very diligent and quick on the job, but he gains from it? Da'ovid kol shabsa v'lo ovid b'mal shabsa. He does malacha the whole rest of the week, but then he stops on erev Shabbos by chatzos. So then he's gaining. He's a very eager. He's a very hard worker. But he knows when to stop. Zoriz v'nifsa David kol shabsa v'avid b'mala shabsa. When he does work the rest of the week as well as erev Shabbos, then he's losing out by that, because like we said, then he's not seeing a simon bracha from that. Mausha actually learns, by the way, somewhat differently. He says, after all, if Malah Shabbos means Erev Shabbos, but that implies, it sounds like it means the entire Erev Shabbos, but we know the entire Erev Shabbos, there's no problem with Malacha. Certainly until Chatzos, there's no problem. And from what Rashi is saying, Min HaMincho L'mayla is only from Tesha Shoyis and Mechtsa, so you're talking much closer to Shabbos. So he explains, Mausha explains then what it means is, when he's not doing his work, the whole Friday, what it means is then he has plenty of time on Friday to prepare for Shabbos. So the Zoriz v'nisker is he works the rest of the week, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, he works hard, but then Friday he takes off. So that way in the morning he can be preparing for Shabbos, and that's a good thing. On the other hand, the Zoriz v'nifsad is where he's doing malacha also on Friday morning. Now, there's no issur in that. There's no even a lack of simon bracha, but it means now he doesn't have time to prepare for Shabbos properly. Then continues the braisa, zoriz shuffle v'nisker. What's the example of the person who's lazy and he gains by it? He doesn't work the rest of the week, and doesn't work Erev Shabbos either. So even though he's not working on Erev Shabbos, it's not because of covered Shabbos, it's because he's lazy. Nevertheless, he's gaining by it. That's an example, as the Gemara is going to bring now, of an example where he's doing the mitzvah Shaloi Lishma. So Marsha explains a little bit differently. What it means is, again, he's not working on Friday at any regular job, because Friday he's preparing for Shabbos. So therefore he gains by that he's acting with covered Shabbos. And shuffle the nifsa, then you have the person who's lazy and loses out. Deloy Ovid Kola Shabsa for Ovid Bamala Shabsa. He doesn't work the rest of the week. All of a sudden he wakes up Friday morning and realizes he's got to work, and therefore he's got the worst of both. Because he's not working the rest of the week and not gaining from that. And on Erev Shabbos, he's working at the time when he's not supposed to, or at the time when it interferes with Shabbos preparations. So the Gemara says, Omer Rav, or Rava rather, Hani Noshi de Mechoza, the women of Mechoza, Afagab de Hodlai, Avinin Avid de Mamal Shabsa, the reason why, now it is true, the reason why they don't do work on Fridays, Meshumma Fankusahu, really it's not out of covered Shabbos, it's because they're pampered, they're spoiled. De Hoko Yoyma Vyoyma, Nami like Ha'avdan, after all, they don't do Malacha the rest of the week either. Nevertheless, they're still in this category of shuffle v'nisker, because after all, they are honoring Shabbos by not working on Erev Shabbos, even though they're not doing it for the right reason. So the Rif points out, in other words, what is Rava adding to what he said before? Is he saying, because the Braisa before could be talking about, let's say, for example, why is he not doing work? Is Taka because he's lazy or because he's depressed or whatever? So if they wanted to do work, they could do that. On the other hand, these noshi de mechuza, it's more, they're so pampered, they're physically incapable of working. So therefore, you would think, then they're not doing anything l'shem mitzvah, and nevertheless, Rava is saying there is. Elsewhere, by the way, in the Gemara, we had in Shabbos, where Rava says about these same women, he says that they're the gozlosis baaleim, they're stealing from their husbands, and Rashi makes a point over there, first of all, because their husbands are supporting them, and they're not contributing anything in return, and also because their husbands are trying to support their expensive habits, and the husbands may even be driven to steal in order to support them, so Rava criticizes them very strongly for that, but nevertheless, he's saying over here that they still have the schar mitzvah of honoring Shabbos. There is also, in that connection, there's a Gemara in Bava Metzia where Rava tells the people of Mechuza, honor your wives so that you'll become rich. So the Rebbe comments on it that there's an essay from Rebbe Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, on that Gemara and talking about the deeper reason why Rav Taka is the one who says that and why the people of Mechuzah, etc. Anyway, but the Rebbe comments on that even though Rav is putting down these women of Mechuzah for the way they act, nevertheless he's telling their husbands, even them, you gotta honor them in order that you'll become rich. Okay, so the Gemara continues, Rava Rami. So Rava pointed out a contradiction when we talk about a contradiction between Psukim. Ktiv ki godo me'al shamayim chasdecha. So you have the second half of Kapitel Nun Zayin and the first half of Kapitel Kuf Ches are almost identical. There's a few differences between them. And one of them is in Kapitel Kuf Ches, the Pasuk is ki godo me'al shamayim chasdecha. Your chesed is great above the heavens, Ochtiv, and then earlier in Kapitel Nun Zayin, Kigodo Ad Shamayim Chasdecha, your chesed is great up to the heavens. So what is it? Is it only up to the heavens, or is it even higher than that? So Hoketza Kan Ba'Oisin Lishma, Kan Ba'Oisin Shaloi Lishma. Depends whether the person is doing a mitzvah Lishma or Shaloi Lishma. If he does it Lishma, then it goes Me'al Shamayim. If he does it Shaloi Lishma, then it goes up only Ad HaShamayim. So Marsha explains, in other words, that his chesed goes, it stays in the Olam HaTachton. So it goes ad shamayim, but it doesn't go above that. And then in both places, the Pasuk continues, Marsha continues, in both places, the Pasuk says, v'ad shchokim amitacha, meaning that when it comes to the either way, whether they're oisin l'shma, whether it's oisin shaloi l'shma, either way, they'll join in the schar of the tzaddikim, osin lavoi, where shchokim is specifically, the Gemara mentioned in Chagiga, is the level of Shemayim, where mon is ground up for the shchokim, shoichkin behen mon tzaddikim lasid lavei. So either group will be able to join in eating that mon that's reserved for the tzaddikim lasid lavei. That's vad shchokim amitacha with either one of them. Right, so the Alter Rebbe makes that point, so you have the story, the Alter Rebbe mentions in Perek Lamed Tes, Mem, and whatever, of Tanya, that when a person does, bring from the Zoyar, that when a person does mitzvahs without Dechilu or Rechimu, they don't fly up the Maya, they stay down here on earth. So yeah, there's the story after the Alter Rebbe's second time in Petersburg, there's the deal that's made over there with the Misnagid, who helped him get out of there, that he'll go and visit three famous Misnagid Shirabonim, and one of them asks him on this, where do you get this from? The Alter Rebbe says, from the Zoyar. The Rav says, we don't pass him from the Zohar. So the Alter Rebbe says, it's a Befeidah Shigemara. What Gemara? The guy couldn't remember. And so the Alter Rebbe points to this Gemara, that we see that there's a difference between Lashma and Shalai Lashma, and what's Lashma? After all, is with Abba Beira. So Kiddur Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, and this is like what Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav. Amar Yehuda Amar Rav, La'olam Yasek Adam Torah over Mitzvahs. A person should always occupy himself with Torah and Mitzvahs Afal Pi Shalai Lashma, even if he's doing it Shalai Lashma. Shemitoch Shalai Lashma, Bo Lashma, from doing it Shalai Lashma, he'll come to Lashma. And of course, you also have the explanation of Pichzidus that Mitoch means within the Shalai Lashma. Deep down, he's doing it Lashma. He just doesn't realize it yet. So now we need to bring it out. But yeah, Tosfos over here, and in Brachas and in a few other places in Shas, points out a distinction, because after all, you have other Gemaras that imply that it's not a good thing to do mitzvahs and to learn Torah, Shaloi Lishma, and Adarabba. There's expressions over there, a person would have been better not created. And so in all these places, Tosfos makes the distinction between whether there's different motivations a person can have. A person can be doing Lishma out of Av of Yira to the Eivishter with various levels of Av of Yira. Then you can have one kind of Shaloi Lishma is he's doing it because he wants to be famous. He wants people to respect him as a Talmud Chacham and a Baal Mitzvahs and so forth. So it's not the best thing, but eventually he'll come to that from that to Lishma. Then you have the kind where he's doing it Lakantir, where he's doing it in order to lord it over other people and put them down and I'm so much better than you, or even to use his knowledge of Torah as a weapon, like to be able to use it, for example, to be able to find loopholes in Dini Mominus or whatever to be able to cheat them. That's the kind of thing that we're saying. Okay. Further on, the Gemara talks about, we said that a person does Malacha on Erev Shabbos and Erev Yom Tov and so forth, then he ain't a roya simen bracha l'olam. So now the Gemara talks about other similar things where a person does certain kinds of work and he doesn't see a simen bracha. When a person is looking forward to the money that his wife makes from a particular kind of work that we're going to talk about in a minute, or from rent or from millstones from a mill, ain't a roya simen bracha l'olam, from those kinds of things he won't be a simen bracha. So what does that mean? Schar ishtoi means matkulta. When we talk about his wife's earnings, we mean specifically when she's earning money from matkulta. Rashi explains matkulta means a scale. So she takes a scale and goes around to the marketplace to find, is there anybody who needs to weigh something? And she'll rent them the scale for a small amount of money. So she's not really making very much out of each time. And it's bizarre to her that she's having to go around in the marketplace over there. So then he's not going to see a simon bracha from such money. Tosfos brings a different explanation that matkulta means spinning yarn. So what happens is you have the Gemara tell the Mishnah and the Gemara talk about in Ksubas that a wife is expected to do certain besides that she has to do certain household tasks to keep the house running. Besides that, also she has to contribute to the family income by spinning wool or whatever and making yarn out of it and making clothing eventually. So like this though, what she does is she goes and spins for other people, and then she's selling that. So that's a bizoyan because Tosfos points out what happens is spinning wool means her sleeves are going to ride up. It's hard to keep your arms covered when you're spinning and having to constantly lift up and down your hands, and therefore it's a bizoyan because it's impacting on her tzniyus. So that's much quarter. Rechayim means agato. When we talk about rechayim, when we talk about millstones, means when you're renting them out. So you're renting out. People can come and grind wheat by you for X amount of money, but it's not really, again, you're not really making very much money out of it. So on the other hand, Rashi says, if you have a business buying and selling millstones, gezunta hei, that's like any other parnosa, by all means do that, and you can see a simon bracha. So, however, the Gemara says, Aval avdo mizabna. Now, though, we're talking about, again, where the wife goes around with scales, like Rashi says, or goes and sells yarn, goes and spins yarn for people and sells it, like Tosfa says. So that's when we're saying, Enoroya simen brach. Aval avdo mizabna. But if the wife goes and makes clothing out of the yarn that she spins, and she sells the clothing, ishtabuchin, ishtabach bakra. On the contrary, that's a very good thing, and the Pasuk praises the Eish Hashayil for that. Shenema sodin as savatimker, as the Pasuk says, she makes a sheet and she sells it. Now, Marsha points out though, the fact is though, what happened to Kol Kvudo Bas Melech Pnima? He says, well, that's why the pasuk continues. B'chago nosna laknani. She doesn't go herself out into the marketplace to sell the sodin. She uses a middleman. She sells it to a knani, where we learned a couple of days ago that a knani means a merchant, and then he goes and sells it on her behalf. So that way, she's keeping Kol Kvudo Bas Melech Pnima, but she's still contributing in a way that does not compromise her tznius, and therefore the pasuk praises her for that. Okay, the Gemara continues. Tana Rabbanan, hamistaker b'kanim over kankanim. When a person makes money off kanim, he sells reeds or thin sticks or whatever. Rashi describes people use them for like fences and mechitzas and things like that. Over kankanim, or he makes a living selling empty barrels. Ain't a roya simen bracha loylam. Then again, he doesn't see a simen bracha from such money. My timer, kibin the nafish afach zayu. Because the bulk of them is very large, the kanim and they're very lightweight relative to their size, so they're very bulky relative to the actual weight of them. So therefore, shaltebe in abisha. Therefore, an ayin hara has power over them. Like people look at it and they say, "Wow, what a big business the guy is doing! He's got so much merchandise over there, and it's not so obvious that we're talking about very insubstantial type merchandise because each piece is very bulky but weighs very little. So therefore, he ends up being affected by an ayin hara, and therefore not much comes of it. How it is, Bechlal, we talk all over Shas about the ayin hara. What's the mechanism behind it? Why should somebody else looking at him cause him to have a loss? One interesting explanation that's given is that it means that the other person feels bad about it. So that causes the Eibishter now to look with not such an ayin tov on you. You are not on you, whatever, on the person who's doing this kind of business. You're causing that another yid is feeling distressed because of you. Are you taka worthy of what you have? Another point is it also it's more generally that the Eibishter looks and sees, do you taka deserve this? So there's a number of different aspects of it. The Gemara continues, Tonan Abonan, Tagre Simta, people who do business in a simta. A simta is a side street. So you have like the actual Rishus HaRabim that people and animals and whatever are constantly walking down. And then you have simta, which are the little side streets where sometimes people set up shops over there. But it's also close enough to the Rishus HaRabim that everybody sees what they're doing. So, again, it's a matter of ayin hara. Umgadli behema daka, people who raise small animals, sheep and goats, in Eretz Yisrael. So Rashi says everybody's crying out against them because they often allow their animals to graze in other people's fields, and therefore people notice them and make a big deal about it. Tosfos points out, if the person, Fakir, here we're saying Ein Roya Simin Bracha, there's a different Gemara that says a person can become rich from such things, from raising sheep like that. That would be, Tosfos says, B'chorshin, if he's raising them in the forest, so they're not interfering with anybody's fields, then fine, that's a good thing. But if he's raising them out in the places where there are fields, then we're saying over here, that's no good. In fact, Maharal Shah points out, the fact is, there is an Isur Drabbanon to raise Behema Daka in Eretz Yisrael. So here we're saying, not only is he Oivan an Isur Drabbanon, but in addition, he's bringing on himself an iron heart. And then also the Kotze Lonis Tovis, also people who chop down good trees, fruit trees in particular, in order to sell them for wood. The same thing Rashi says, everybody notices it. I call Tmein Veloyas in Alayan, as Rashi's expression. Everybody wonders it. Everybody's curious about what they're doing, and everybody is talking and gossiping about them. So because of that, Ayin Hara has an effect on them. Again, Maharsha points out here also there's an Isser involved, the Baal Tashkes. So not only is Oivan an Isser, but also he's bringing an Ein Hara on himself. The Noisnin a name, the Chelek Yofa, and also people who always put their eyes on the good part. I mean, Rashi explains, whenever they have something to divide with somebody else, they always say, I need the best part. I'm always machted to take the best part. So again, that causes people to look at them, and it brings about an Ein Hara against them. So all four of those, Enim Roim, Simon Brachal Olam, my time at the Tav Hibuhu Inshi. Again, because people wonder and people find it curious the way they're acting and what they're doing, and therefore that leads to an Ayin Hara. So we'll continue with that topic tomorrow, Bez Hashem. So the point is that your person should be careful not to be involved in these kinds of things that lead to an Ayin Hara, and to the extent. So besides these things, I mean, you have various other places in the Gemara where it talks about other things that can lead to a person being affected by the Ayin Hara. On the other hand, you have, for example, a Gemara in Brachas that tells us a person has ways of not being affected by the Ayin Hara. You have the Gemara mentions over there, for example, the person says, Anonimizara de Yosef Kasina. He should mention that he's from the descendants of Yosef who are not susceptible to Ayin Hara. So in other words, if the idea behind Ayin Hara, if one of the ideas behind them is it causes other people to feel bad about it, so if he acts in a way that it won't make people feel bad about it, they won't have reason to be jealous of him, that they'll be happy with him that he's being successful, then he has nothing to worry about the Ayin Hara before. The Pasuk says, in Zechariah, actually the same Zechariah Perek Yudalad that we were just learning about the other day in the Gemara, the expression is, V'omdu ragla b'yomohu al harazesim. Hashem's feet on that day, by Mechamas Gog and Magog, will stand on harazesim, and the mountain will split, etc. So what's the point? What does this represent? His feet standing on harazesim. Harazesim is the mountain of olives. So, and olives produce oil. The oil represents chokhmah. So that represents an avodah Hashem, and that's done with understanding and avodah sichlus. So it's like oil where the person where the person had there's a thickness, there's like a solidity to it, kind of. And then on the other hand, the feet represent avodah Hashem that is done with Kabbalah's oil. So now the Pasuk is telling us by Yoimahu, the regal has to be above the Shem. The foot, the Kabbalah's oil, has to be higher than the avodah with Tam Badas, because the avodah with Kabbalah's oil is higher than avodah that's done in a sichliistic way with Tam Badas. Continuing on halachas of the nighttime, so we started talking about last time what a person should do before he goes to bed. He shouldn't eat too heavy a dinner. And the last thing we said was that it's normal for a person to sleep 6 hours. And I may mention there was something that ever once mentioned from the Buchacher that the implication is it's the Rambam says 8 hours, but it really means 8 hours over the course of 2 days, so 4 hours a night. Anyway, another din is a person should be careful not to sleep in a room alone. Now, the Alter Rebbe says not just not to be careful. The Alter Rebbe says it's flat out usur to sleep in a house or in a room. Actually, the Alter Rebbe uses the expression but bias in a house yichidi alone. However, in Kuntras Acharon over there, the Alter Rebbe goes into a little more detail, and he says that the main kpeda is when it's a bias offal. Usually in halacha, a bais ofel means a house without windows entirely. Maybe it means also a dark one. There is a popular minhag that if a person is sleeping alone, he keeps on a light or something like that. So l'chora, that takes away the problem of bais ofel. Anyway, also a person shouldn't sleep in a place that's too hot or too cold. Plain and simple, a person will sleep more comfortably if he's in a place that's a decent temperature, but it probably also has to do with carry and other considerations like that. Okay.